Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Kelly Jean Kelly, Mario Ritter Jr., and Jill Robbins. Later, you will hear the second part of A Princess of Mars in our series, American Stories. But first, here is Kelly Jean Kelly.
Palm trees moved slowly as a light ocean breeze passed through Palm Beach, Florida, last Saturday. That was the day a woman entered the grounds of U.S. President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort. The woman told security officials she was going to the resort's swimming pool. She showed them two Chinese passports with the name Yujing Zhang. The security officials did not know if she actually had permission to enter, so they called the front desk at Mar-a-Lago. The property is on an island between the Atlantic Ocean and a small waterway called Lake Worth Lagoon. The land was developed in the 1920s and bought by Donald Trump in 1985. Today, it is part house, hotel, and restaurant. It has a spa, a swimming pool, workout machines, and tennis courts. Trump goes to Mar-a-Lago every few weekends to enjoy the warm weather, rest, and do government business. Hundreds of people who have paid to be members of Mar-a-Lago are also permitted to visit the area. However, they must be checked and questioned by security. On this day, March 30th, security officials noted that the name Yujing Zhang sounded similar to a club member. They gave her permission to enter the grounds. When the woman came inside, she spoke to workers at the front desk. She said she was there a little early for a United Nations friendship event, but the event did not really exist. Later, she said a friend had told her to come to Mar-a-Lago. She claimed she wanted to talk to someone in the Trump family about Chinese and American economic relations. Workers and security officials quickly grew suspicious. Officials searched her belongings and found four cell phones, a laptop computer, and an external hard drive. They also found a small device containing a computer virus, but nothing for her to wear while swimming in the pool. Zhang was charged with making false statements to government officials and illegally entering a restricted area. She has been detained until a court hearing later this month. Officials are also looking into whether Zhang was part of a larger effort to reach Trump and try to do harm. They are treating the case as a possible threat. The event raises concerns again about the difficulty of keeping Mar-a-Lago secure. David Criss is an expert on foreign intelligence at Culper Partners, a consulting business in Seattle, Washington. He says Mar-a-Lago is not well defended and is at risk of both physical and cyber attacks. A top official at the security company CTC International Group described guarding Mar-a-Lago as a nightmare. The number of people who can come and go make protecting Trump and the property much more difficult. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
Property rights are not only about ownership of land. They provide reasons for people to invest in and develop their homes and communities. That is what Malcolm Childress says about the importance of studying people's opinions about property rights. Childress is co-director of the Prindex Research Group.
You know, when people have security and feel secure about their property rights, they're more likely to want to invest in their homes, to make long-term investments in businesses, to do the kind of things in agriculture that lead to long-term crops and investment in soil conservation.
A new study by Prindex found that 1 in 4 people questioned in 33 countries fear losing their homes or land. Most of the countries surveyed are in Africa. The others included Britain, Cambodia, Colombia, Indonesia, Mexico, Peru, and Vietnam. One surprising finding, however, was that the East African nation of Rwanda had the lowest property insecurity in the countries studied. Only 8% of those asked feared losing their homes or property in the coming years. Childress said that Rwanda has, in recent years, put in place a policy to document each property and to identify who has rights to that land. He added that Rwandan officials have created a system which provides legal protections to landholders. These are the kinds of policies that will lead to progress on the issue of land rights, he said. 3 other African countries had the highest levels of what the survey calls tenure insecurity, a person's fear of losing their home or land. The 3 were Mali, Liberia, and Jordan. Mali had the highest. 44% of those asked feared they would lose their homes or land. Insecurity was highest in West and Central Africa, and lowest in Latin American countries, the study found. Childress said that the differences between countries were not as surprising as the differences between men and women within countries. In the study, women were more likely than men to have fears of losing their homes or land. Women were about 12% more likely to be concerned about losing their home or land if they split with their husband or the husband dies. Childress says elected officials need to direct more attention to making laws fair for men and women. He added that people's concerns can also be affected by how well laws are carried out in the real world. The report noted that countries with laws guaranteeing equal treatment of the sexes may still have imbalances in citizens' concerns about property rights. The study did not find a strong relationship between tenure insecurity and legal issues like inheritance rights in many places. Anna Locke is the other co-director of Prindex. She wrote in the company's blog that property rights are listed under poverty reduction as one of the United Nations' sustainable development goals. She said the UN calls for increasing the number of adults with legally documented property rights, and also the number of adults who believe their rights are secure. Prindex's studies, she said, are one way to better understand what people around the world believe about their property. Property rights are included with the goal on reducing poverty because people's expectations of the future are important to forming their behavior today. For example, farmers afraid of losing their land are unlikely to plant crops for the next harvest. Prindex expects to expand its studies of people's opinions about their property rights and protections. Childress told VOA that the research group plans to release information on 107 additional countries by the end of the year. He also says he wants the research to center more narrowly on individual cities and places where policies could target geographical areas or groups. Prindex recently released the findings from its latest study at an event in Washington. The study was carried out with support from the Global Alliance for Land and the Overseas Development Institute. Both research groups are based in Britain. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
A two-person musical group performs almost every day in the Washington, D.C. area. Masood Omari and Abigail Adams Greenway both play tabla, a musical instrument from South Asia, in Greenway's home outside Washington. They call the colorful room where they play tablasphere, and they call themselves tabla for two. Omari describes the tabla as two drums, with one drum producing a lower sound than the other. There are sticks on the side to change the sound. The top of the instrument is made of goat skin. Greenway says the sound of the drums makes her feel peaceful. What is unusual is that she and Omari both play the tabla together, giving them a modern sound. They play three kinds of music. One is classical Indian music. Another is traditional music of Afghanistan and India. The third is modern music for Western ears. We play new music for the new world, we call it. It's our signature music, and it is composed by Masood. It's for two tabla players, Greenway explained. Greenway grew up in Erie, Pennsylvania, a U.S. city long known for its factories. Her first two names are the same as those of Abigail Adams, wife of the second president of the United States. I grew up listening to classical music and American jazz, Greenway said. My father was a classical violinist. Greenway was once an artist. She moved a long way from the art world when she became interested in Afghan music and musical instruments. She first became interested in the tabla when she first heard the music of India. I heard the music and I just said, "This is the most amazing instrument I've ever heard, the tabla," she said. Adding, "They say that when the student is ready, the teacher appears." Greenway met Omari 8 years ago at a store that sells Afghan goods. I realized that he was this amazing tabla player, and I asked for lessons. I didn't know at the time where this was going. All I knew is that I had a huge desire and a force pushing me to learn to play the instrument. Masood Omari says that Greenway did not speak the language of Afghanistan, but understood the beat and the melody. She was excited to learn and learned quickly. Omari fled Afghanistan when he was 15 and resettled in Pakistan. There, he studied tabla for 10 years before coming to the United States in 2002. Greenway has learned to play harmonium, an instrument also known as a pump organ, from Omari. He said that Greenway plays harmonium like no one else, very soft and gracefully. After spending years studying hard and in training, the two musicians formed Tabla for Two. They play at embassy and museum events, universities, and at the Tabla Sphere for invited guests. Greenway told VOA that she does not have problems being accepted as a woman playing Afghan music. I am clearly an American female, and I am playing their music. It's a coming together of cultures, she said. When I play this music, they are accepting me. The Afghan people are accepting me. This makes Greenway feel like an ambassador, which is the way Omari thinks as well.
I believe that I have an important role in playing and preserving the music of my country, Afghanistan, and sharing it with the world.
I'm Jill Robbins.
And now, the second program in our series, A Princess of Mars.
The creature with the spear was huge. There were many other similar creatures. They had ridden behind me on the backs of large animals. Each of them carried a collection of strange-looking weapons. The one with the large spear got down from the back of his animal and began walking toward me. He was almost 5 meters tall and a dark green color. Huge teeth stuck out of his face, and his expression showed much hate and violence. I immediately knew I was facing a terrible warrior. He began moving quickly toward me with the spear. I was completely unarmed. I could not fight. My only chance was to escape. I used all my strength to jump away from him. I was able to jump almost 30 meters. The green Martian stopped and watched my effort. I would learn later that the look on his face showed complete surprise. The creatures gathered and talked among themselves. While they talked, I thought about running away. However, I noticed several of them carried devices that looked very much like rifles. I could not run. Soon, all but one of the creatures moved away. The one who had threatened me stayed. He slowly took off a metal band from his arm and held it out to me. He spoke in a strange language.
Niktu maktuta sakota.
Slowly he laid down his weapons. I thought this would have been a sign of peace anywhere on Earth. Why not Mars, too? I walked toward him and, in a normal voice, announced my name and said I had come in peace. I knew he did not understand. But like me, he took it to mean that I meant no harm. Slowly, we came together. He gave me the large metal band that had been around his arm. He turned and made signs with his hands that I should follow him. Soon, we arrived at the large animal he had been riding. He again made a sign with his hands that I should ride on the same animal behind him. The group turned and began riding across the land. We moved quickly toward mountains in the distance. The large animals we rode moved quickly across the land. I could tell from the surrounding mountains that we were on the bottom of a long, dead sea. In time, we came to a huge city. At first, I thought the city was empty. The buildings were all empty and in poor repair. But soon, I saw hundreds of the green warriors. I also saw green women and children. I soon learned about many cities like this. The cities were built hundreds of years ago by a people that no longer existed. The green Martians used the cities. They moved from one empty city to another, never stopping for more than a day or two. We got down from our animals and walked into a large building. We entered a room that was filled with fierce green warriors. It was not difficult to tell that these were the leaders of the green Martians. One of them took hold of my arm. He shook me and lifted me off the ground. He laughed when he did so. I was to learn that green Martians only laugh at the pain or suffering of others. This huge warrior threw me to the ground and then took hold of my arm again to pick me up. I did the only thing I could do. I hit him with my closed fist as hard as I could. The green warrior fell to the floor and did not move. The others in the room grew silent. I had knocked down one of their warriors with only my hand. I moved away from him and prepared to defend myself as best I could, but they did not move. The green Martian that had captured me walked toward me. He said in a clear voice,
"Tars Tarkas, Tars Tarkas."
As he spoke, he pointed to his own chest. He was telling me his name. I pointed to my chest and said, "My name, John Carter." He turned and said the word "Sola." Immediately, a green Martian woman came close. He spoke to her. She led me to another building and into a large room. The room was filled with equipment carried by the green Martians. She prepared something for me to eat. I was very hungry. I pointed to her and said the word "Sola." She pointed at me and said my name. It was a beginning. Sola was my guard. She also became my teacher. In time, she would become a close and valued friend. As I ate my meal, my lessons in the language of the green Martians continued. 2 days later, Tars Tarkas came to my room. He carried the weapons and the metal armbands the green warriors wear. He put them on the ground near my feet. Sola told him I now understood some of their language. He turned to me and spoke slowly.
"The warrior you hit is dead. His weapons and the metal of his rank are yours, John Carter. He was a leader of one small group among our people. Because you have killed him, you now are a leader. You are still a captive and not free to leave. However, you will be treated with the respect you have earned. You are now a warrior among our people."
Tars Tarkas turned and spoke softly. From beyond the door, a strange creature entered the room. It was bigger than a large dog and very ugly. It had rows of long teeth and 10 very short legs. Tars Tarkas spoke to the creature and pointed at me. He left. The creature looked at me, watching closely. Then Sola spoke about the creature.
"His name is Wula. The men of our tribe use them in hunting and war. He has been told to guard and protect you. He has also been told to prevent your escape. There is no faster creature in our world, and in a fight, they can kill very quickly. Do not try to escape, John Carter. Wula will tear you to small pieces."
I continued to watch the creature named Wula. I had already seen how the green Martians treated other animals. They were very cruel. I thought, perhaps this beast can be taught to be my friend, much like a dog on Earth. I walked close to the creature and began speaking in much the same way I would speak to a dog or other animal on Earth. I sat down next to him while I talked softly. At first, he seemed confused. I believe the creature Wula had never heard a kind word. In the next several days, I gained the trust and friendship of Wula. In a few short days, Wula was my friend and fierce protector. He would remain my loyal friend as long as I was on Mars. Several days later, Sola came to me with a look of great concern.
"John Carter, come with me. A great battle is about to take place. An enemy is coming near this city. We must prepare to fight, and we must be ready to flee."
"Sola, what enemy is this?"
"A race of red men who travel our world in flying machines. A great number of their machines have come over the far mountain. Take your weapons with you and hurry."
I collected my sword and a spear. I hurried out of the building and joined a group of warriors moving toward the end of the city. Far in the distance, I could see the airships. They were firing large guns at the green warriors. I heard huge explosions. The green warriors were firing back with their deadly rifles. The air was filled with the sound of violent battle. Suddenly, a huge airship exploded. It came down crashing near me. Red Martians were falling from the side of the huge ship, and then it exploded again.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.